Today's message is in Genesis chapter 45, and the title of it, for those of you who are taking notes, is Come Near to Me. Where we left Joseph, he continued to struggle and struggle and struggle with his brothers as they came to Egypt to buy grain. Because the famine had been 2 years in the land. After 7 years of plenty, Egypt was essentially the only place where you could get anything to eat. And so there were a lot of people that were coming into Egypt. Egypt itself was being, you know, they were dispersing the grain that they had saved. But Canaan had begun to come in. People from Canaan had begun to come in to trade with Egypt in order to get grain, because the famine was very, very deep and very, very great. So finally Jacob tells his sons, guys, you got to get to Egypt. I mean, that's where all the grain is. And they kind of looked at each other sheepishly and thought, well, you know, it's the last place we want to go is Egypt, because we might run into Joseph. Little did they know, obviously, that they did not only run into Joseph, but that was the guy that they were going to be dealing with. So Joseph really takes them through the ringer. I mean, he puts them through a lot of hoops, most democracies. And he causes them to finally go back to Canaan and get his younger brother Benjamin, to prove that they weren't spies, ostensibly, but obviously it was because he was struggling. There was a lot of internal struggle. And he wanted to, more than anything else, I think, to see his brother Benjamin. So at this point where we last left him, Judah had pled for Benjamin's life, because Joseph had set him up. Plain and simple, Joseph set him up. He put stolen property, if you will, into Benjamin's bag on the way back, so it could be found there, so he could accuse him and retain him. And it's really not clear what Joseph's motives were. Whether he wanted to just keep Benjamin to himself, whether he really wanted to test his brothers. But what did happen was that they stepped up. The same guys that 22 years earlier had sold him into slavery were now willing to come back and face, as a family, they were willing to come back and face difficulty with their youngest brother. And Judah stepped up and said, if you retain this young man, and we have to go back and tell my dad, he's just going to die of grief. He's going to totally die of grief. We can't let you do that. So Joseph, at this point, verse 1, chapter 45 says, then Joseph could not restrain himself before all those who stood by him, and he cried out, make everyone go out from me. So no one stood with him while Joseph made himself known to his brothers. And he wept aloud, and the Egyptians and the house of Pharaoh heard it. Then Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph. Does my father still live? But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed in his presence. So he couldn't contain himself anymore. He was so moved by the change that he saw in his brothers, by the fact that they did not abandon Benjamin, nor did they abandon their own father, as was their tendency in prior years. And so he could no longer hold it in. So when Judah offered himself as a ransom, he said, that's it. And he cried out. But it says his brothers were dismayed. And actually that word means amazed. The closer definition would be frightened or even terrified. And I think there were two, obviously, two levels there. First was the shock of revelation. This is Joseph. Oh my goodness. And then there's, oh, this is Joseph. 22 years ago, in the pit, sold into Egypt, Joseph, we are toast. So there was the shock of revelation, and then there was the shock of realization. So now they thought they were in deeper trouble than they ever were before. And so it says they were dismayed. They were freaked out. Totally freaked out. Sweating at the palms. Weak at the knees. Freaked out. In Zechariah 12, 10 through 11, it says, I will pour out the house of David upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the spirit of grace and of supplications, and they shall look upon me, whom they have pierced, and they shall mourn for him as one mourneth for his only son, and shall be in bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn. In Zechariah 13, 6, it goes on to say, what are those these wounds in thine hands? Then he shall answer, those which I was wounded in the house of my friends. Obviously, that's speaking of Jesus and the prophecy of the last days when he's going to go to Israel, and they're going to look upon him whom they pierce, and they're going to say, where did you get those wounds? He's going to say, well, you guys. And that's what Joseph is basically talking to his brothers with now. He's saying that, he's basically saying, I'm him. I'm the guy that you sold into slavery. But in verse 4 and 5, it says, and Joseph said to his brothers, please come near to me. So they came near. Then he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. But now, do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here. For God sent me before you to preserve life. Just like it says in Zechariah, just as Joseph is as a type of Jesus, as we've been studying over the last several weeks, Joseph also pours out grace and supplication, not upon the house of David, but upon the ancestors of the house of David. Jesus also, just like Joseph does, did here, he constantly beckons us to come near. He says, come near to me. Come near to me. And just like just like Joseph's brothers, we all get a bit hesitant. I mean, the reason why they didn't want to come near to him, man, they didn't know if he had a knife in his cloak or what. They had no clue what he was going to do. So he poured grace upon them. He poured supplication. Please come here. He had fed them. He had given them grain. And then he told them what this was going on. What was going on. Jesus, he feeds us. He gives us grace. And his supplication is, come near me. Come near me. But both as Christians and those that are non-Christians, we become dismayed. Maybe we've got that thing in the back of our head that says, I just can't. Maybe it's because we've been away from church too long. Maybe it's because we don't read the Bible often enough. Maybe it's because we just don't pray often enough. Maybe we're just not good people. And the same, and a non-Christian will look at it the same way. Well, maybe I just need to be cleaned up before I come to God. And Jesus doesn't say that. Neither did Joseph. He didn't say, you guys get your act right and then come near me. He said, come. Come near me. Jesus says the same thing. Come near me. Just as you are. But verse 5 specifically, it says, do not therefore be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. That is an issue of pride. That is absolutely an issue of pride. We often look at ourselves and say, oh gosh, I know better than that. I should have done better than that. I'm a better person than that. How could I have been so stupid? But Jeremiah 17:9 says, the heart is desperately wicked. Who can know it? So if we were to look at ourselves and say, yeah, I can see where I could have done that. As a matter of fact, I let down my guard. Yeah, I am capable of that kind of sin. And unless I'm careful how I stand, unless I fall into that sin, I could very easily fall into that sin. We're all just a hair's breadth away from hell. And if we step back just enough, we can feel the heat. And what I mean by that is not that our salvation is threatened, but what I do mean by that is that we are never far away from evil. We are never far away from the capacity for evil. Never. And so when we think, oh, I'm gonna beat myself up over this because I sinned in this particular way, or I know better, or I should have done better. Possibly if we came before the Lord and said, Lord, I know I'm a sinner. I know I'm capable of this. I know that my heart is desperately wicked. Because both salvation and forgiveness are wrapped up in accepting what that nail-scarred hand is reaching out to offer us. And that's mercy. That's exactly, it's the same thing. But we have to recognize our need, just like they did, in order to accept. Because here is this offer for salvation, excuse me, not salvation, but for deliverance from Joseph. He's about to tell them, go back and get dad, bring everything, bring the whole family back. But they still have to accept it. They still have to accept that. Just like we had to accept that invitation from Jesus to invite us into our heart. Just like we had to accept that daily dose of mercy. We still have to accept it. And the only way that we're going to do that is to recognize that we are sinners. Totally, totally sinners. And that we have nothing else except Jesus. Now there's a legend, and I have to say that it's a legend because I really don't know that it particularly happened, but I do know that there's an ink stain on the wall of the bedroom where Martin Luther used to be. And the legend says that one day during prayer, Satan came to him in a very visual way and began to accuse him of all kinds of ugly sin. And Martin Luther just continued to write as Satan continued to accuse. And what he was writing was everything that Satan was saying. And then as he turned to him, he said, thank you for pointing that out, because now I know what I need to go to Jesus with. And he took his ink well and he threw it at him and said, get out of here. That's exactly as the enemy accuses us. As he says, you're no good. You go, yeah, that's right. He says, you're capable of doing this. He says, you're right. You're absolutely right. Because, as we all know, you can't kill dead men. And so if we're dead to ourselves and alive to Christ and alive to His Spirit, and we're perfectly aware that we're capable of sin, then we will be able to say, yeah, Jesus, I need your mercy. I need your grace. I need your deliverance daily. I need it right now. Not when I'm in a difficult situation, not at that point of temptation, but I need it now. So that's what Joseph is offering them. Now, this verse does not excuse sin, because it does say, don't be angry with yourselves because you sold me for hair, for God sent me before you to preserve life. It does not excuse sin. It doesn't say, it's okay what you did. It simply says that God's able to use it. God is sovereign, and He is able to use it. It also doesn't deprive Joseph or his brothers of their own free will, because in Psalm 76:10, like we talked about, like we read this morning, it says, surely the wrath of man shall praise thee. Surely the wrath of man shall praise thee. The remainder of wrath shalt thou restrain. Regardless of what man does for evil, God will always use that to bring glory to Himself. Regardless. Even the evil of our own lives, God will use to His glory. God says that He will allow men to go so far, but no further. And the Spirit of God currently is the retainer that ultimately does not allow God, does not allow what God has willed to be denied. When the church is taken up, we will see that the Spirit of God is no longer going to restrain, and that's when we're going to see the lawlessness that Scripture prophesies about. But right now, God is saying, all right, I'm going to use the evil that is coming out of my creation, but I'm never going to let it go so far that it corrupts my will. Now, was it God's will that 3,000 people died in tragic circumstances last year? I really don't know. I don't know. But I do know that His glory has already been shown in so many things, in so many ways, and that has yet to be fully realized. God is not done with that. Was it God's will that 6 million Jews were killed just 60 years ago? Was it His will that millions of others were removed from their families, their homes, their businesses? But do you realize that the heinousness of the Holocaust, the very depravity that the world saw against the Jews 60 years ago caused such a universal sympathy towards them that they were restored to their homeland. Modern day Israel, which is prophecy fulfilled, came out of the evil of man and the sovereign will of God. Fascinating, fascinating stuff. There was a young man that was hunted down and assassinated because he presented a threat to the local authority. Was it God's will that many men would eternally perish for the part they played in that? No. But it was God's will that the death of that very popular Jewish peasant on a Roman gallows was for the salvation of the world. Even though it grieved everybody else around him, they couldn't see past the cross. Was it God's will that Judas Iscariot, that potentially Herod and Pontius Pilate would suffer eternally because of the part that they played in that? I don't think that he did, because God said that his will is that none would perish. His desire is that none would perish. But yet he said, you're going to make that choice, and so I'm going to use it. I am going to use it. And that's exactly what Joseph is saying here. He's saying, you guys screwed up, but God done good. God is going to use and shape the lives of those whose hearts are loyal to him. He is always going to use and shape the lives of those whose hearts are loyal to him, and is even going to use the actions of the wicked as part of the sculpting blade. In verses 6 through 8, it says, for these 2 years the famine has been in the land, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. And God set me before you to preserve a posterity for you in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. So now it was not you who sent me here, but God. And he has made me a father to Pharaoh, a lord of all his house, and lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. So Joseph understood God's role for his life. And he took satisfaction from that instead of satisfaction from taking the pound of flesh out of his brothers. He wasn't seeking vengeance. He was not seeking vengeance. He knew that his appointment had just come. And that was why he was a father to Pharaoh. It says he was second in command only to Pharaoh, but basically what was happening, he was running a country. Pharaoh was kicking back, hanging out on the Nile. Joseph had it well in hand. So Joseph knew that this is what this all came down to. He was very much aware that this is what this all came down to. It wasn't about the power that he held. It was about the deliverance that he could extend to his own family. And he also knew that it says that he was sent before to preserve as posterity for them in the earth and to save their lives for a great deliverance. He recognized what he was supposed to do. And that as such, we also need to be aware of the divine appointments in everyday life. We're not called to be Dick Cheney. Okay? We're not called to be the second in command. But we are called to recognize divine appointments in everyday life. We're called also to recognize that when God has revealed something for our lives, that we're not to sit and think about it and sit and pray about it and then decide if we're going to do it. Don't hesitate. If God has put something on your life, said, this is what you're supposed to do. This is exactly where I want you to be. Do it. Without hesitation. Just do it. Now, what you do have to do is make sure that you understand what he is telling you to do. There's very often where we tell our children or we receive something from our parents or from our bosses and we say, okay, I understand exactly what you told me and it's completely different than what it is that you thought you heard. So obviously you want to make sure that what you've heard from God, you know you've heard from God, but once you know that you've heard it from God, do it. Don't hesitate. And keep the divine appointments that God has set out for you. Even the small ones from day to day. And he's going to put those in your path, and he's going to say, this is where you need to be, and this is why I've got you here. This is why you're stuck in traffic. This is why your car is broken. This is why you're in this job. This is why you're stuck at school for you know, forever, it seems like. This is where you're supposed to be. And I want you to, instead of wishing that you were over here, find out why you're here. Find out why you're here. Joseph said it was to preserve a posterity on the earth. For Joseph, it was provision. It was not salvation. It was provision. Let's not make the mistake of those who of looking at those who give us provision, those who give us what we need as being our salvation, and losing sight that it's just for our posterity on the earth. If we rise to a position of greatness, or if we rise to a position of authority, or even the things that we look around and we see, recognizing that this is only for our time on the earth, and we're not going to be able to take it with us. So what Joseph is saying is, buddy, you guys need to eat to live, and that's what I'm going to be able to provide for you. But that doesn't exclude God. That he simply says, I'm being used as God's agent to give you what you need on the earth. So, again, recognizing that our focus, their focus should not be on Joseph, and hopefully will not be on Joseph, as saying, well, gosh, the guy delivered us out of a famine. He kept us alive. And so we honor and give homage to Joseph. No, they honor and give homage to God. Joseph is simply the mechanism. And as we talked about before, Joseph was very good about deflecting that kind of homage to the Lord. It's God that did this. I did not do this. And he'll continue to do that. We must also continue to do that. Verse 9, hurry and go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me. Do not tarry. You shall dwell in the land of Goshen. And you shall be near to me, you and your children, your children's children, your flocks and your herds, and all that you have. There I will provide for you, lest you and your household and all that you have come to poverty, for there are still 5 years of famine. And behold, your eyes and the eyes of my brother Benjamin see that it is my mouth that speaks to you. So you shall tell my father of all my glory in Egypt, and of all that you have seen, and you shall hurry and bring my father down here. The word Goshen, which is where they're going to be, is probably Egyptian from all I can see. Excuse me. And I believe it means draw near. And that's exactly what Joseph is asking them to do. Draw near. Come to yourself. Come to your deliverance. Move into your deliverance. Come to Goshen. But they still have to make that decision. They're going back to Canaan. They have to make the conscious decision to uproot and come to their deliverance. They have to draw near. Jesus offers us the promise of life more abundantly if we come to Goshen, if we draw near. But we have to make that decision. We made that decision when we said, yes, Lord, come into my heart. But we need to make that decision daily. Lord, I want to draw near to you. I know that you're my salvation. I know that you are my provision. And I know that it's still my choice daily. Daily, it's still my choice to draw near to you or not. Salvation is a one transaction deal. But a life in Christ is moment by moment, hour by hour, day by day, week by week. And we need to make that decision on a regular basis. Verse 14, then he fell on brother Benjamin's neck and wept, and Benjamin wept on his neck. Moreover, he kissed all his brothers and wept over them. And after that, his brothers talked with him. Now the report of it was heard in Pharaoh's house, saying, Joseph's brothers have come. So it pleased Pharaoh and his servants well. And Pharaoh said to Joseph, say to your brothers, do this, load your animals and depart, go to the land of Canaan, bring your father and your households and come to me. I will give you the best of the land of Egypt, and you will eat the fat of the land. Now you are commanded to do this. Take carts out of the land of Egypt for your little ones and your wives. Bring your father and come. Also, do not be concerned about your goods, for the best of all the land of Egypt is yours. Then the sons of Israel did so. And Joseph gave them carts according to the command of Pharaoh and gave them provisions for the journey. He gave to all of them, to each man, changes of garments, but to Benjamin he gave 300 pieces of silver and 5 changes of garments, and he sent to his father these things, 10 donkeys loaded with the good things of Egypt, 10 female donkeys loaded with grain, bread, and food for his father for the journey. So he sent his brothers away, and they departed, and he said to them, see that you do not become troubled along the way. As you journey, do not become disquieted or unsettled in your spirit. I can just imagine them going back from Egypt to Canaan. You jerk, I told you not to do that. Yeah, but you're the one who gave me the idea. So, yeah, but whose idea was the coat? Jerk. Yeah, your mother. You know, just on and on and on. And he says, don't become troubled along the way. Don't become unsettled in your spirit, and certainly don't let the enemy, your own heart, your own wickedness tell you that this is a farce. Don't let your own spirit tell you, man, he's going to get the whole family down there and kill us. And so he was very, very clear to say, do not be troubled along the way. We cannot fear drawing close to our salvation. I was having a conversation with somebody yesterday, and they talked about, you know, God-fearing people. And they see a lot of God-fearing people. And they see that there's a... there's something, I guess, good about restraining, you know, seeing that if you do something wrong, you're going to get zapped. And I said, well, that's true. There's certainly nothing wrong with restraint. I mean, that's how we teach our children. If you do this, this is the consequence. You know, and that's exactly what our laws are based on. If you break that, these are the consequences, unless you're an NFL star. But what I told him was, I said, okay, but I don't not do something against my family because of the fear of consequence. I do it out of love for them. And so if all I do is live out of a fear of consequence, then all my life is going to be structured around not doing. But if I live with a confidence that I can draw close, then my whole world is just opened up. And I can do things because I can risk. I can do things because I know that I can be forgiven if I screw up. I can do things because I can walk in grace. They were so scared of their own shadow because of what they had done 22 years ago and the 30, 40, 50 years that they had done prior to that, because they were total jerks. They lived a life of jerkdom. And so now they're faced with somebody doing something good for them, and they're going, oh, we can't do that. I mean, gosh, where's the rest? You know, where's the retribution? You know, where's the restitution? Where's the punishment? Well, there is none. God said, come. That's all you need to do. Come. I went out and talked to this guy, and I said, you know, I fear electricity. I fear it enough not to stick a knife in there, an outlet, but I can stick a plug in there and be okay. Well, I might not be okay, considering the way I do things, but in theory I can stick a plug in there and be okay. So I have a healthy respect for what electricity can do. I have a very healthy respect for what God can do. A very healthy respect. But what I don't do because he restrains me so much as what I want to do is do it because it pleases him. Because I know that he loves me. So often we can get caught up in what we're not doing, and so we're not doing enough for God. Or, you know, I've got this sin that keeps coming back and forth in my life, and I just need to pound it out. But I would encourage you to look at the Lord and say, okay, God, I just want to draw near to you. I want to be close to your salvation. So I know and understand and fear you in that healthy, healthy fear that God can and will. Or he can kill you. He can reduce you to nothing. But yet he chooses not to. in verse 25, it says, "Then they went up out of Egypt and came to the land of Canaan to Jacob their father. And they told him, saying, Joseph is still alive. Oh, and he's governor over all the land of Egypt." And Jacob's heart stood still because he did not believe them. I can't understand why. He'd have difficulty believing them. But when they told him all the words that Joseph said to them, and when he saw the carts which Joseph had sent to carry him, the spirit of Jacob their father revived. Check that out. It doesn't say the spirit of Israel revived. It said the spirit of Jacob. Food? Riches? Really? Really? I'll be dying. Huh. Joey is now head of Egypt. Not bad. But then it says, then Israel said, "It is enough. Joseph, my son, is still alive. I will go and see him before I die." During this time of worship, I'm going to ask the worship team to come on back up. During this time of worship, I would ask you to consider what we talked about today, that we would draw near to the Lord, that we would draw near to the salvation that God offers us, that it is a free gift. It is a free gift. And that salvation, again, that salvation is extended by the same hand that extends us mercy. So if you have not accepted that salvation, I would ask you to. If yet this morning you have not recognized that God's mercies are new every day, asking for that mercy, recognizing your own capacity for sin, and recognizing that you can walk with Him.